Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Hello, welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. Great to have you along here on Faith Radio. Our goal, day by day, to help connect faith to life. And we always talk about our program as a way to find biblical principles and apply them to daily life situations. And I always like to learn from experts, learn from people that know a lot about things. Today, we're going to learn what adulterers want you to know about protecting your marriage. That's probably not the teaching group that you'd normally probably want to be, spending time with.
But. Well, you know, there's a good number of people that have walked down that road and wish they didn't.
Yeah. That's the subtitle of a book we're going to reference today called Close Calls. And as we talk about marriage, protecting your marriage, it just reminds us, Ted, that we do have that lasting love. It's the new audio book from Alistair Begg. We've got a download available, the audio book from Alistair Begg. You can get it at myfaithradio.com. It's just simply a sign up. It's free this month. And so I hope that you'll take advantage of that. And Alistair, you know, reading through the importance about, you know, covenant and marriage and some very, very wise advice, as always, you expect from Alistair Begg.
Kind of a pit stop for you and your spouse as you go around the racetrack of life together and get to what you need.
That's refueled. It. Okay. You know, if you, you're online, myfaithradio.com, just sign up for that lasting love. You know, if you've gone on the internet at all lately or seen the news, you know there is a website, internet website, that has caused a lot of attention. That's actually, you're saying, what it's just, what, if you want to have an affair, that's...
Their slogan is just deplorable, in my opinion. Yeah. It says, life is short, have an affair. Yeah. Ashley Madison is the company.
Yeah. And they've had some data breach issues, yeah. Right? But there obviously is some other issues there as well. But the fact is that affairs are a sad reality of many relationships and marriages, and we're going to talk about how to avoid them, how to protect your marriage, and we've got some great insight today from my guest. Let me introduce Dave Carter to you. He's pastor of counseling, counseling ministries at First Evangelical Free Church of Fullerton, California, and his specialty is adultery recovery and prevention, for which he has appeared on a number of major TV programs, plus tapings for a variety of outreaches and ministries. His interviews and articles appeared in Ladies' Home Journal, USA Today, The Counseling Connection, a variety of other magazines. He holds graduate degrees in biblical literature and in marital and family therapy. He is a clinical member of the California Association of Marriage and Family Therapists. Written several books, including Torn Asunder, Recovering from an Extramarital Affair, Secret Your Family Tree, Unlocking Your Family Patterns, Finding Freedom from a Hurtful Past, and the one we want to reference today, Close Calls, What Adulterers Want You to Know About Protecting Your Marriage. Dave Carter, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thank you. You made me sound great.
Well, that's, you know, we want to start strong, and then, you know, where it goes from here, it's who knows.
See if I can carry the ball.
Sure, huh? Yeah, it's up to you. It's all on your shoulders now, Dave. So I do want to get some, you know, probably some overview, kind of percentage, get an idea. What are the percentage of maybe marriages that have been affected or affairs have been a part of their relationship?
Well, depending on what survey you read, somewhere around 2/3 of married men in America and about 50% of women married report that they have had an affair or been unfaithful while married. So that's the population at large, but among the Christian population, not quite as bad, but the number's been pretty consistent since the late 80s, and that is that 40% of Christian marriages experience sexual betrayal by the time one of the spouses reaches the age of 40.
That's,
so we're talking epidemic stuff, big time, accidental, stuff that people never intentionally get involved in. They don't get married to do this kind of stuff, especially when it's contrary to their stated values and beliefs. But it's quite frequent.
You're in the book information and your publicity talks about you're a sought-after expert on issues of adultery. And I was kind of joking with you before the program. Is that something you had to pick a major in college? And but it's not actually quite that way. But you did have a close personal reason to pursue this, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was fresh out of seminary working in a church when my senior pastor in that church ran off with another woman in the church. She had two young sons who I had been having Bible studies in their apartment prior to that over several months' time. And it was a life-changing experience for me, primarily because I'd only served in two churches or been real active in two churches. And in my first church, while still a high schooler, the senior pastor ran off with a woman in the church. So when it happened to me the second time, I decided I'm going to go back to graduate school and figure this out. And I've spent the last 35-plus years working on adultery issues, trying to recover from it, helping people recover, and then trying to prevent it.
By the way, we've got five copies of Dave's great book called Close Calls, What Adulterers Want You to Know About Protecting Your Marriage. And five of those copies available thanks to the publicist. It's out of Northfield Publishing, a branch of Moody. And we'd love to give those to you and get those into your hands. And you need them or give them to someone that you know could really benefit from this, because there's a number of assessments in there as well and exercises that are really going to help you strengthen your marriage. The number to sign up for the drawing for that, we'll do the drawing at the end of the hour. It's 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. And we will, again, take names and do the drawing for that here at the end of the hour. If you'd like to be on the program, you talk about this issue, you're welcome to remain anonymous as well, just so you know that. And we'd love to have you join the conversation. Dave, talk about the word adultery and affair. Are they synonymous?
Well, adultery basically involves, I actually prefer the word infidelity. There are three forms of it. There is sexual adultery or sexual infidelity. There is visual infidelity called pornography. And there is emotional infidelity. And we call that just what it is, emotional infidelity. So it comes in three forms. The pain of it is just about the same all across the board to the person who's been betrayed. Even though some of us might, who have not been involved, it might think, well, that's not as serious looking at pictures as it is to actually being with someone. That's not really the way to look at it. The way to look at this is what it does to the spouse who has been betrayed by the attachment that this person, their spouse, the one they love and trust, has done, gotten involved in. Now, the interesting thing today, because this culture has so many men and women working together, serving together, working out together, in all kinds of settings that their spouse might not particularly like. They're with other members of the opposite sex. So what we see today is a huge rise in emotional infidelity. We almost call it accidental infidelity. People don't set out. They don't join clubs. They don't join ministries in order to get involved in this. But that is the outcome many times. When you share hearts with someone that other than your spouse for a particular passion that they don't share, your spouse doesn't share with you, you're in a high-risk zone.
Well, in fact, you address that you know, people that don't think they're at risk may be, in fact, very much at risk, right? Talk a bit about that.
Oh, I think they are, yeah. Yeah, there are three criteria where a friendship, and believe me, I grew up in the Woodstock era, so I am not for women sitting on one side of the church and men on the other. But there are three criteria that these friendships move through that over time actually make them emotional infidelity. The first one is when the individual begins to develop a mood-altering experience. When they see this person, when they get a text from them, when they get an email from them, they maybe even start to dress a little differently if they're going to go to a practice because this person's other person's going to be there. They begin to save articles that they might, or music they might want to share with this person that they wouldn't share with their spouse. There's all kinds of characteristics how these friendships begin to be forged and developed. So it becomes mood altering. Your mood lifts, you become happier, you look forward to seeing them, you look forward to getting a mail from them, you like the phone call. And then it begins to move into the second level, where the conversation begins to turn from what's outside you or professional to what's inside you and personal. That's the second level. And as that conversation begins to turn on how you each feel and what's going on in your emotional lives, it sets you up for the third level. The third level is when you begin to hide it because you know you are in trouble. And if you told your spouse how you felt about this person and what this person was generating inside of you, you would be in trouble. So you hide it, and it keeps it in trouble. It keeps it a secret. And we have a little saying in the field, you're just as sick as your secrets. And what happens is it begins to develop this inner life. It takes on a life of its own, and it becomes very difficult to manage. And you finally say to yourself, what the heck? I'm already in trouble. I might as well go ahead and enjoy it. It's just the same thing process that happens when you're on a diet. You ever been on a diet, Neil, where you can think of the ice cream in the freezer and you just can't think of anything else? And you finally decide you're going to go get just a teaspoon and just take a scoop. It won't hurt your diet, just a little bit. Well, you go look for the biggest spoon you can find, and you go take a scoop out of that ice cream, and you say to yourself, you know what? I've already blown my diet. I might as well eat the whole thing. And that's where people get in trouble.
Is there a season? We're in the middle of summer. Is there a season when affairs are more, we're more susceptible, or maybe, you know, a stage in marriage, a time in life?
There is. Yeah, research has been really good about uncovering that kind of frequency rate. The most dangerous time period for men is 30 to 39. 75% of all first-time adulteries in America happen in that decade. Secondly, the most dangerous season of a marriage is pregnancy and the first year after delivery. 50% of all first-time adulteries in America happen in that two-year period. So we know there's dangerous times, dangerous seasons. After losses, for instance, the need for comfort begins to surface. You send your kids off to college. You begin to feel real alone in that process. We know, for instance, that there's a need to reattach after the children flee the nest. And many couples haven't spent much time with each other while raising a family, and they sit down at that breakfast table when that last kid walks out of the house, and they look at each other and they say, who in the heck are you? And that's another big trouble sign. That's why the fastest growing rate of divorce in America age-wise occurs when kids are launched for college out of the house.
Dave Carter has spent 30-plus years counseling husbands and wives trapped by infidelity. He knows that the vast majority of these heartbroken people never saw it coming, and we're talking about it today. The book is called Close Calls, What Adulterers Want You to Know About Protecting Your Marriage. Dave is pastor of counseling ministries at First Evangelical Free Church of Fullerton, California. He's written several great books. You'll find out more about some of the articles and writing at the website closecalls.org. And stick with us, because we're going to spend some time going through some of the risk factors, and we'll describe what it means to have a close call marriage, and talk about trust and a number of things, infatuation. It's all coming up. You would like to sign up for a copy of one of Dave's books. We've got five copies of Close Calls to give away. It's 877-933-2484. This is a great resource for you. It will help you, as the subtitle says, protect your marriage. Close Calls, the conversation of what adulterers want you to know about protecting your marriage. More with Dave Carter in just a moment.
Maybe you and I were never meant to be complete. Could we just be broken together?
The powerful new song from Casting Crowns is certainly appropriate as we talk today about Close Calls. That's the title of the book from David Carter. The subtitle is What Adulterers Want You to Know About Protecting Your Marriage. David has spent 30-plus years counseling and working with husbands and wives who have been trapped by infidelity, and knows that the vast majority of those people never saw it coming. And we're getting some great insight today on how we can protect our marriage. We've got some copies of the book to give away. I invite you to sign up for that at 877-93-FAITH. If you'd like to join us, we have a question or a comment, and we'd love to have you come in on the program as well. Dave, you mentioned something called the close call marriage. In fact, you talk about close calls in the book. Let's define what we mean by that.
Well, a close call is where there is some kind of an emotional attraction to an individual other than your spouse. And like I was saying earlier, in this culture where men and women are working together, serving together, ministering together, working out together, everything else, it happens all the time. It will happen. If you deny it happens to you, you're either dead or you're really troubled, because in this culture, it's bound to happen. But the issue in a close call marriage is actually a little different. It means that the marriage has some spots in it, some voids in it, where it continues, these attractions just continue over time. There could be 6, 8, 10 of them in the course of a 20-year marriage. And it's problematic. People hide them. These attractions, they sometimes won't tell don't get involved the other person. The other person isn't even aware of the attraction. But marriages need to be even better than they have ever been if you're going to weather this kind of exposure to members of the opposite sex.
And that is the realities that we live in. This is the world in which we live. So we want to be able to do all that we can to reduce those risk factors. And one of the things that I just want you to talk, just to say a word about, talk about the word trap, how that word is used in the scriptures. And I think it's a verse in Timothy, I think. But it was just kind of a reminder to me, I guess, that, you know, we somehow think as believers, you know, we have an active faith walk. We're immune to some of this.
Well, when Jesus was tempted by the devil through those three temptations, there's a very interesting verse in the Gospels where it says of the devil, he left Jesus for a more opportune time. Now, what that means is there's going to be sometimes in your life when you're more vulnerable than you are at other times. So how do those vulnerable times, how do they develop? Where do they come from? How do they grow? And it helps answer the question that began to surface in our own research. I was on a research team for 10 years. The question, is it possible for someone to be innocently and ignorantly prepared, the word prepared, for adultery? And the answer is yes. 50% of all these pastors that we surveyed said they got involved with a friend. And 90% of these pastors who admitted to sexual indiscretion said, and they got to choose words out of two lists, they chose words out of the blindsided, bushwhacked, shocked, surprised, didn't see it coming. So there is a blindness and entrapment that begins to occur that you just don't see arising in this particular relationship that maybe you've been developing over time. So we use a picture of a web that gets built between two people innocently and ignorantly. And it contains the kind of things that we all do out of kindness and generosity sometimes. Not with intention of going to bed or having sex with this person. That's the furthest thing from our mind. But I'll go through a bunch of those real quick.
Sure.
You save topics of conversation that with this person. Maybe you're an engineer, and she is too, and your wife doesn't like math. And so you just begin to save little articles. Or maybe you're a musician, and your husband doesn't care for music. And so you start saving CDs, and you're passing them back and forth with these people. You begin to maybe share some spousal difficulties with the goal of improving your marriage. You know, you say, well, I don't understand women. Help me figure out how they work. You might even begin to anticipate seeing this friend because they're always happy and smiling at you. And when you go home, it's second shift. There's work to do. There's people frustrated. It's a very different environment. You might even provide a special treat for this person because they've been working so hard in this ministry you share. You're up getting a cup of coffee and you say, I'll take one of these Starbucks mochas or whatever those desserts are. And so you just begin gradually over time building this relationship innocently. You actually might find yourself spending more alone time with this person. Maybe you're on a a biking club or a hiking club, or you work out at the gym with this person, not just them, but you see them more than you would see your spouse alone. All kinds of things like that. Just kind of gradually build this web. And think of it, too, besides a web of entrapment, it's also a web of support. That's that stage two there where you start sharing emotional things, troubles, hard times that you're going through. And as you do that, it just begins to close like on you like the frog in the kettle. You know, you just don't even realize how close you are to dying.
And I think the line in the book that sort of caught my attention was that no trap is ever set unintentionally. In terms of the enemy is, as you said, he's looking for that opportune time. And he knows at our weakest moment.
Oh, no question about it. He doesn't care when you fall, just as long as you do.
Dave Carter, my guest today, we're talking about close calls, what adulterers want you to know about protecting your marriage. It just occurred to me, Dave, do adulterers want to tell others what to do to protect their marriage? I mean, is regret universal?
I have never met. Now, remember, the people I see in the office, I only see these kinds of couples, first of all, and it's the only kind of couple I've seen for 30 years. So I only see the ones, though, that really feel badly about what's happened. And even if they can't save the marriage, they want to work through the injury to some degree. I don't see the people who hop on the back of a Harley and ride off into the sunset. But the people I see regret deeply what they've done. They feel very badly about it. There's a lot of hurt and injury. They feel badly for their kids. They feel badly what they've done to their reputation. They feel badly what they've done to their financial pictures that they have. People return to a marriage not because they love the spouse, but because of the kids and money. That's why they come back initially. But they still feel badly. They'll tell you, I wish I'd never done it this way. If I was going to leave this marriage, I should have gotten a divorce first and then gotten involved. They don't like it. So they do want to tell their stories, and those especially who save their marriage want to tell their stories. They want to protect people from this.
And the book is really, you've got it full of stories of these are people that you've spent time with your office, right?
Yep. They signed off on releases, every last one of them, because they want their story. They want their names protected and identities, but they want their story, how this happened to me, to help somebody. And it will. It does help people.
And we're talking close calls, what adulterers want you to know about protecting your marriage. Getting some good insight today from Dave Carter, pastor of Counseling Ministries at First Evangelical Free Church in Fullerton, California. Specialty is adultery recovery and prevention. And he has written a number of books, including Torn Asunder, Recovering from an Extramarital Affair, Close Calls, the one we're referencing. We've got some copies of Close Calls to give away, and would love to have you just get a copy in your hands for your benefit and maybe someone else that you know and care about. 877-933-2484 is the phone number, 877-93-FAITH. So sign up for one of the five copies of the books to give away. Or if you'd like to ask a question or leave a comment, we'd appreciate that as well. You could also, if you want to be anonymous, would like to do something online, you could go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link there for you to just set aside your question or concern there. It's at myfaithradio.com, and then click on Connecting Faith. And we'll hear more from Dave Carter in just a moment as we work through some of the risk factors. And we also want to talk about some of the close calls and then how we can build some barriers. More on that coming up in just a couple minutes.
Oh, baby, no, baby, you got me all wrong, baby. My baby's already got all of my love. So no, no, honey, I'm good. I could have another, but I probably should not. I got somebody at home, and if I stay, I might not leave.
Yeah, that's head back home, guys. Pay attention. Avoid those close calls. What adulterers want you to know about protecting your marriage. That's the book we're referencing today, written by Dave Carter, who's a pastor of Counseling Ministries at the First Free in Fullerton, California. He's authored several books, has 30-plus years of counseling just in the area of couples, families that have been heartbroken through infidelity. And he and his wife have been married 49 years, and so he has a lot of understanding in this area. We want to talk, David, it reminded me as we were talking in the first half hour that, you know, because it's innocent and ignorant that it seems to come upon us, should we avoid, you know, opposite sex relationships? Should we avoid, you know, or just kind of, we shouldn't interact with others and we shouldn't show acts of kindness? It seems like that maybe would be extreme, but do we need to act in some extreme ways to protect ourselves?
Yeah. Well, you do if, and this is the big if this friendship or doing these gestures of kindness changes your mood, in other words, you begin to feel differently about this person, maybe depression goes away, your anxiety disappears, you're quite excited about doing this, you hear from them on the phone, your mood changes again. It's you need to think in terms that infatuation is a mood-altering experience, just like alcohol. And these people who continue to cultivate friendships that change their mood, that feed the infatuation, they're drunk. They're stone drunk. And that's the only way you can really explain what happens to a person's rational behavior when they become irrational in practice. So they're under the influence. I used to work in an alcohol addiction treatment program, a 30-bed alcohol inpatient unit, and we would chart these people under the influence of a mood-altering substance. We didn't always know what the substance was initially, but infatuation does that same thing to people. People give up kingdoms for infatuation. They give up families. They give up inheritances. They give up careers. They do stupid things. So how does that happen? Well, there are a number of contributing factors that kind of help set the stage for infatuation to be so effective. There's all kinds of risk factors that people bring from their childhood experiences. There's risk factors in the marriage. There's risk factors in their own personal stories. All of that sets people – it doesn't make them do this, but they have a predisposition towards it, and contributing factors can – quickly overrun them. That's why everybody really is vulnerable. Everybody has a story that has some weaknesses in it.
We want to talk a little bit more about some of those risk factors and marriages and personal stories, but as long as you're talking about infatuation, you mentioned there are five words that all start with A that you say are readily apparent when we're infatuated, and they really do set us up for why this is we get so drunk on this, because these are such important emotional needs, aren't they?
Oh, they are. And many times they diminish over time. We can't get enough of them because people begin to take us for granted. They just kind of assume things are going to happen, et cetera. Those five words are admiration. We all want to be admired. Affirmation, that's the verbal contact or even the written contact that actually is very specific. Well, third word is accommodation. We begin to accommodate that person. We'll drop things that we're doing to take care of some needs they might have because we like the feedback we get from them. And then there can even be kind and non-sexual gestures of affection, maybe a side hug, maybe an arm on the shoulder, maybe an arm around the shoulder. Just general kind affection, and eventually it turns into an idolization, like an adoration, where you really adore this person. You begin to see them as above reproach. They can do no wrong. They have all the whatever it is you need anyway. And all of those five A's lead to another A itself, an injured attachment. And they begin to feed the friendship, those five A's do, and they begin to rob and starve the marriage. So it injures the attachment to the marriage simultaneously while building up the ego of the individual involved in that. Now, that's the way it works. You always see that process. People don't get involved sexually or emotionally with people that don't like them. Liking that person is a key component of it. And this is how liking that individual begins to grow and develop.
You know, speaking of getting involved sexually, is sexual involvement, is that the driving motivation?
Well, it seems to be more prevalent in men, but it's not primarily the driving motivation. When it is, we call it class 3 adultery. That's kind of a sexual compulsivity issue. you know, Eli had two sons. They were sexual addicts. They were both priests. And they took women out of line at the temple, took them into a tent, had sex with them. And God killed those two men. And God killed Eli prematurely because he wouldn't stop the practice. That was not an affair or a relationship. It was strictly sexual addiction and for sexual pleasure. Now, that kind of behavior we often see with pornography. We'll see it with prostitutes, massage parlors, strip clubs, where men or women in many cases, and the growing cases, I should say, are using members of the opposite sex or even the same sex for their own pleasure. That's not an affair. That's not a relationship. But there are four other kinds of inappropriate relationships that do become sexual over time. And if you want to go into those, we can talk
about
it.
Yeah, let's touch on those. Go ahead.
Okay. First one is what we call a one-night stand. David and Bathsheba is a great illustration of it. They didn't know each other. They didn't have any relationship. He saw her. He lusted after her. She came to his apartment area there, had sex, got pregnant. We know the story. And that is the one affair that is often involved with alcohol. Almost always requires alcohol. People go to business meetings. They go to training sessions for their corporation. They go to professional conferences. They're sitting down with themselves, having a glass of wine or two at dinner, seeing somebody sitting by themselves. Lo and behold, you can paint the rest of the story. The second one is a very powerful emotional attraction, class two. Samson and Delilah is a great illustration of that. Samson never had sex with Delilah, but he was so attracted to her, he could not stay away from her, even though he knew she was trying to kill him. That's an addiction. Okay, and he continued to hang around her and talk to her and everything because he loved being there. The picture we have in Scripture of those two people, he's got his head in her lap, and she's caressing him and just talking to him, and we see a lot of that kind of behavior in class two. Class three, I already talked about sexual compulsivity, pornography, all that kind of stuff. It's not about the marriage. That is not about the marriage. That would have happened no matter who the individuals involved married. It's not the spouse. Class four is an affair that began to surface in the 90s in really good marriages. And we call it the marital void affair. There's an empty spot in this marriage that is otherwise very good. And I presented this to a bunch of pastors in South Florida. There are about 500-600 of them there. And I said, I don't have a biblical illustration of this. And one pastor at the back yelled out, that's Abraham and Hagar. That's what happened there. And actually, as you look at it, it's a perfect fit. It's an inappropriate sexual relationship that focuses upon the marital emptiness. For instance, maybe you're an outdoor person and your spouse doesn't like the outdoors, and maybe you sing in a worship team and your spouse hates music. And so you begin to build this relationship around the void in the marriage. It's not, they don't text each other, they don't call, there's very narrow boundaries, but it is inappropriate. Then that last one, class five, is what we call an emotional infidelity with a person the betrayer calls a friend. We're just friends. We haven't done anything. And that's true. I've seen these relationships sometimes go on for 35 years, but people cannot stop them. And there's been no sexual contact, no touching, no kissing, no nothing, but they can't stop it. They can't stop the texting. They can't stop the phone calling. They can't stay away from this person because this person changes their mood. Now, this last class is going to become the most frequent in the very near future. It already is becoming the most frequent. And the reason for that, since 1995, you have been able to get access to old girlfriends and old boyfriends. And the infatuation you have with that old girlfriend or that old boyfriend is still stored in your brain. If you don't believe that, you ought to just go look at Barrett Jackson Auto's auction, where cars that I paid $1,700 for when I was a kid in high school in the 60s, now sell for $300,000. Are they better cars? No, but they bring back memories. They're retro. So when you get with this person that was your old girlfriend in high school or college, and you start chatting with them online and everything else, I don't care if they gained 100 pounds. It's the memories they stir up in you that really matter. And you don't have to build infatuation. The infatuation you had with them is already stored in your brain. So we say this about those kind of memories and those kind of people. If you stay in touch with an old girlfriend or boyfriend for 30 days, you will become confused about your marriage. That you begin to think, I think I married the wrong person. And if you stay in touch with them another 30 days, you will be trying to find ways to meet and get sexually involved with them. 0 to 60 is all you have before the infatuation overtakes you.
Dave Carter, my guest today, talking about his book, Close Calls, What Adulterers Want You to Know About Protecting Your Marriage. We've got some copies to give away. The number is 877-93-FAITH. An anonymous caller who wants to know, does infidelity before marriage, either with the fiancé or another person, does that create a higher risk factor for adultery after marriage? Which brings up, maybe you can talk about some of the, you know, marriage and personal history and some of those things, Dave.
Okay, great. You want me to do that right now?
Yeah, it'd be great.
Oh, okay. That's an interesting question because I, for one, as on the research team, I thought that would make a difference if they were promiscuous prior to marriage. So we actually asked that question on the survey, and it actually turned out to not be significant. We asked the question, we took those people who admitted to 6 or more sexual encounters in adolescence from 13 to 20 and compared them with the people who had actually acted out, who admitted they had acted out, and it was not a risk factor at all. That's kind of a surprise to me. Clinically speaking, I would tell you it does seem to factor in, but I can't figure out quite how yet at this point. But there are factors that are significant. For instance, if you have a family history of infidelity, either one of your parents became involved and had an affair with someone other than their spouse, other than your parent, that's a risk factor. If you come from a single parent or blended family, that's a big risk factor. It just makes all the sense as you think about it. You got this single mom maybe that really worked hard to keep you kids in clothes and food, and she didn't have a lot of time for nurturance, and you were missing a dad in the family system. I could tell you all kinds of stories like that. So that's a risk factor. If you come from an abusive, physically or sexually abusive family with a lot of chronic tension and conflict, that's a risk factor. Sex is very comforting, very comforting. In fact, it's one of the primary motivations behind sexual behavior is the comfort it brings. If you were molested as a child or adolescent, you are more likely to act out. If you trusted Jesus as a child, you are 3 times more likely to act out in adulthood than if you trusted Jesus after the age of 25. Very interesting statistic. As you begin to think about that, it makes sense to you, though. People who trust Jesus as children, sometimes their faith doesn't grow a lot, and you know they have experienced redemption from maybe a bad thought or pouting or something of that behavior versus somebody who's lived 25 years without Jesus probably has a huge history that he feels forgiven for, and it just changes a whole lot of the attitudes and behaviors towards Christ, especially as you move into midlife. You begin to think sometimes maybe you've missed out on things if you trusted Jesus as a child and grew up in a Christian family, all that kind of stuff. And if you have learning disabilities, an attention deficit disorder, hyperactivity disorder, you're definitely more likely to act out. There's poor impulse control in that situation. There's a lot of injured attachments in that. They're not easy people to like. Many times they get a lot of scolding and correction and feel somewhat unwanted in environments. So they act out more frequently when they get into adulthood.
Those are some of the risk factors. We're going to take a quick break and come back because there's hope. Just because you have a risk factor in your personal history or your marriage or your marital style doesn't mean that that you have to experience a close call, although you may have a time or two. We're going to talk about how to protect your marriage. That's the bottom line of the book, Close Calls, What Adulterers Want You to Know About Protecting Your Marriage, written by Dave Carter, my guest today. Dave's a counselor, pastor, author, best-selling author. He's written several books, including Torn Asunder, Recovering from an Extramarital Affair, the one we're talking about, Close Calls. You can find out more online, closecalls.org. You can join us with your calls at 877-93-FAITH. We've got copies of the book to give away. We'll do that at the end of the show. 877-933-2484. It's 49 past the hour. It's Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stave. I'm talking with Dave Carter today. Dave is pastor of Counseling Ministries at First Evangelical Free Church, Fullerton, California. Has specialized in infidelity, adultery recovery, and prevention. Written a number of books on that topic. The one we're referencing today, Close Calls, What Adulterers Want You to Know About Protecting Your Marriage. Dave, we've just gone through a number of the risk factors. People might be listening and go, what hope do I have? There is some hope, though, right? That doesn't mean that just because we come from a history or a background or have some challenges that we have to succumb to this.
Oh, exactly. And in fact, what it says to you, though, is you need to know what you're bringing to the table so that you can be better prepared to prevent it from influencing you. For instance, I have asthma. I have asthma in four generations of my family. Many of my family members in the past have died from it. So what do you do? Well, you start treatment early and do prevention, and you stay away from problems that could create this asthmatic condition. So you get smart, okay? You live smart. You try to. And so there are things that you can do. And one of the first things that you can do is kind of be self-aware of what's going on inside of you and be honest with yourself. God is very interested in how you think and how you act, but he's also very interested in your feelings. Your feelings is what colors your heart. So you need to know. We use an acronym. You can look at the palm of your hand. You'll see four fingers and a thumb, and each one of those can be very helpful to you. The thumb is hungry. The index finger is angry, lonely, tired, and bored. Those five mood states, we teach alcoholics and other addicts to be aware of those feelings, because those are what break sobriety. Those are what cause you to fail. That's what causes you to act out again when those five mood states are present. They don't all have to be there, but the more that are, the more likely you are to succumb to temptation. Hungry, empty, just feeling like you need something, you're not sure what, angry, frustrated, irritated, lonely, all alone, nobody cares really, tired, exhausted, worn out, and bored. Now, so just know what's going on inside of you and be aware of that. Secondly, one of the great exercises I encourage my couples to do in recovery processes is get a little assignment notebook. We used to call them that. They have a little wire spiral across the top. You and your spouse take this little notebook, and every day you write down something you like about your spouse. It can be a behavior, a value, a practice, who they are, what they do. It doesn't make any difference. You just can't repeat it. And you list that on your notebooks privately, each one of you do, and then you write two or three sentences why you like that trait about them. And then that night before you go to bed, you thank God out loud for this quality, behavior, trait that you have listed in your notebook and the reasons why you like that. You thank God out loud in front of your spouse. It's a great way to teach couples to pray for each other. It's called the compliment prayer list, and the research behind it took place over 30 years with Stewart and Stewart. So it's a great tool. It will change your marriage across age, gender, cultures, doesn't make any difference. Then a third one that we do a lot of is eight greats. Each of you make a list of the eight greatest experiences in your relationship. They don't have to be extravagant. They can just be a great night, a barbecue in the park. Now, there are conditions. No kids can be present. They can't be the birth of any of your children, and it can't be your wedding day. But it can be an experience that you had dating before you got married. And it can be your honeymoon. Just make a list of eight greats, each one of you privately. And then you get together and share that list. Most couples will have three to five that match. And then in this combined list, you put all the matching ones first, and then she gets one, then you get one, then she gets one, then you get one, until you have eight. Those experiences are what held you together through thick and thin. Those experiences are what fueled the bonds that you have together. And they need to be redone and revisited, and you need to reflect on those. Those are very important, those eight grades. Then third, you can Google Sensate, S-E-N-S-A-T-E, Sensate Focus Exercises. They've been around for 65 years. They come out of Masters and Johnson's original instruction. Kaplan added to it. The Berkeley Sex Therapy Group added to it. Those non-sexual touching exercises that do not lead to erotic touching change attachment levels. They change attachment levels. They calm anxiety. They soothe anger. They just have all kinds of wonderful effects on a husband-wife relationship. We do this with our children. This is how we attach ourselves to our kids. But we stop the attachment process with when we get married. And the issue that happens is we have no sexual tension that exists between a husband and wife. Once, when you're dating, there's all kinds of sexual tension. You can only go so far. But when you get married, you just think, you know what, I better take advantage of this. I'm not sure when this is going to happen again. And so as soon as there's any kind of teasing or flirtation taking place, sex is the outcome. And as a result, spouses quit teasing. They quit flirting, and they quit acting in ways that really create sexual tension. Couples, good marriages, need to learn how to build sexual tension.
The book is full of, we were talking about assignments, the book is full of assessment tools and opportunities to really work through. I mean, you can really dig in and get some helpful advice there. We don't have time to go through all of them, but I just recommend them to you. And you want to find out more about the book, it's closecalls.org. I do want to, we got about two, 3 minutes left, Dave, and I know one of the things you talk about, all trust is built by the same process. You know, what are the steps toward rebuilding trust if it's been damaged by a close call or maybe a full affair?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, it starts like this. To the degree that the spouse who's been betrayed can forgive, to that degree he or she can begin to rebuild respect. And to the degree that he or she begins to rebuild respect, they can begin to rebuild trust. And to the degree that they rebuild trust, they can rebuild love. So it goes forgiveness, respect, trust, and love. If you don't have respect and trust in a marriage, you don't have a marriage. You might have a piece of paper, and you might be living on the same roof, but you don't have a marriage. Because it's the respect and trust that really hold you together, that mutual respect and trust. It takes time. And I would say to the person who's done the betraying, the best way to enhance the forgiveness process for both of you is to be very thorough in your request. If you generalize it, it won't happen. It's like in 1 John 1:9, Jesus knows our sins. He doesn't want us to tell him our sins. He already knows them. He wants us to admit to our sins. So he wants the detail coming right out of our mouth, not because he needs to learn about it, but because he wants us to acknowledge it. And so when I work with my couples who've had trust betrayed, we're talking about major detail in the forgiveness letter. The longest one I've ever heard of is 180 items. Most first-time affairs, adulteries, have somewhere between 30 and 70 items on the forgiveness list. It's not just the sex. It's the money, the reputation, the betrayal of trust, what you did to the kids, what you did to me, the threat to your career. Maybe it goes on and on and on.
Well, our time is unfortunately not going on, and so we've only got just a few seconds left to say thanks to Dave Carter for his wise words, and I just encourage you to check out. I know there's more writing and articles online, right, at closecalls.org?
Yes, there is.
All right.
Yeah.
And the book, recommended reading, Close Calls, subtitle is What Adulterers Want You to Know About Protecting Your Marriage. It came out a couple years ago from Northfield, which is a division of Moody. Dave Carter serves as a pastor of counseling ministries at First Evangelical Free Church of Fullerton, California. And Dave, thank you again for your good work in this area and for encouraging us today.
Oh, thank you. I love talking about this stuff. I really do.
If you missed part of today's program or want to pass it on to a friend, go to our website and you can find the podcast there at myfaithradio.com.